out of the story, and it's our job to write them back in. And 50 years after Paul Robeson's death, it's time for a reappraisal of one of the great Americans.
And in 1949, Life magazine ran a spread of people they considered dangerous and un-American. The list included figures like Langston Hughes and Albert Einstein. Can you talk about the parallels you see with the media in 2026 and the complacency and even cooperation with the Trump administration?
Well, complacency, cooperation, and that was one of the things that was so compelling about working on this, because the history is not some old relic. It's not really dusty. Every time I was working on a chapter, I said, this feels like today, and this sounds like today, and this sounds like today. And when you look at the complacency that we have today, so many people look back at that time and said, how did we allow that to happen? But the same thing is happening right now. You see the, especially in media, and especially with the public, I think people become numb to it. And
Howard,
if it's not happening
to
them specifically.
We're going to have to leave it there, but I thank you so much. People have to pick up your book and read the rest. It is fantastic. It's called Kings and Pawns, Jackie Robinson and Paul Robeson in America. That does it for our show. Happy early birthday to Trina Nadura. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on
K-B-O-O Portland.
Listen, laugh, learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Genius Box. I'm Althea. I've got some friends in the Genius Box today. I got Reed. Hello, Reed.
Hi. I'm trapped in my own Genius Box this morning.
He's trapped in his own Genius Box. And we also have our lovely engineer, Nate, in the Genius Box.
It's really nice to be taking Reed's seat here. I was expecting it to be crowded. So it's nice we made him his own box.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, you know, we like to think of it as intimate, but yeah.
You're probably expecting it to be warmer late. But I keep a lot of icy hots on my rear end.
Hmm.
I'm not sure which sensation that would make me feel. Would I be cold or hot?
Icy or hot, yeah. Right. Well, this is Genius Box. It's our Friday talk radio show. We are going to be talking about some headlines, some news with you, and then about halfway through the show, we'll get into our call-in segment. We're talking about anarchist calisthenics later, so if that intrigues you, stay tuned. We're going to get into it. But we have stories, some things that are happening in our community that we have to talk about, including one that we didn't get to last week. This is the first thing I want to talk about with you guys is Rose City Reform did a study of what Portland City Council, how all of their votes went down last year in this study called Diversity by Design. It was sort of an audit of the council's reform, and it was really interesting. It actually came out right as, I think, like in close proximity to when the city council president debate was happening, right? That kind of sucked up a lot of the political air in the city the past couple weeks. Very contentious. But that's not necessarily what the study found. Anybody want to throw in maybe their favorite finding? I could go on and on. Reed, hello.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You're allowed to talk. Sorry, I feel like such a tyrant.
No, you shouldn't feel like a tyrant.
Okay.
Althea, you're like a puppet master.
Oh, and that's better.
Nate and I are your humble marionettes.
All right, well, somebody draw that. But what did you think of this study?
Well, I thought that it's got a lot of really nice pictures. It's got a lot of really nice little graphics.
Visualizations are important, for sure.
Althea wanted to manipulate me like a silly puppet today, so.
And that's what I said before I came in. but I think some of the biggest takeaways really are, I mean, one, that there was a ton of non-unanimous votes compared to council in years past. That's kind of to be expected. They were voting on a lot more things, and there were a lot more people to get in line to have to vote for something. But that doesn't mean that the council was not agreeing on stuff. Like, most of the time, they were working together to have as big of a coalition as possible, kind of despite what maybe some media narratives have about the Progressive Caucus, or PCOC, which was a big subject of the city council president debate that we were looking at the past couple of weeks. They found in their study that the three main areas of disagreement had to do with the city budget, the like governance issues, and like just procedural questions. But they looked at all these other sort of categories of things that they might be voting on and found way more cohesion with the council than you really might expect. Nate, did you take a look at this? What did you think?
I did take a look at it. I was mostly just like, the whole Peacock name struck me. I hadn't heard that before.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I don't know that I'm into it.
I'm personally not into the name, but that is colloquially what's being said.
Unfortunately, yeah, what's been sewn to them by some reporters.
I think they named themselves that.
I don't know. I think I was just kind of struck by none of it seemed surprising.
Hmm.
Like, just, people who think similar things vote together. And I don't know, maybe I didn't read it that closely enough, but it just seemed like, well, yeah, that's people who agree.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's interesting to look at that because sort of the predominant media narrative about Peacock has been that they're this sort of like cabal that votes together all the time. And yes, they align the most, probably because, like you say, Nate, they have more political agreement, but they don't, it's not that crazy different from how they voted compared to the non-Peacock counselors, because it is like 50-50. There's an interesting, on Rose City Reform's website, there's this matrix that shows the council agreement scores, and so there's like a few different ways to visualize it, but it's kind of cool. You can definitely see that the Peacock counselors agree with each other the most, the highest agreement score, and it's sort of like this counselor plus this counselor, how often do they vote together? And the folks who are the top of that are Murillo and Green. They vote 90% of the time together. But the Peacock members who are most likely to vote separately would be Canal and Dunphy, which is interesting. And the counselors who agree with or would vote with Peacock the least are Dan Ryan and Eric Zimmerman, who have lower scores in that regard, which again isn't that surprising either. But it was also interesting, they looked that the four of the Peacock counselors are members of DSA. They didn't agree with each other at higher rates than the rest of the Peacock members, which was interesting.
And I will say, even like looking at non-Peacock members like Steve Nomick, Loretta Smith, Olivia Clark, Lana Pirtle Guinea, they're still agreeing with Peacock members like at a rate of around like 60%. So it's really, I mean, there's definitely a distinct like difference between them and like Peacock members. They're like more like around the 80s, high 80%. And then it just drops off with Dan Ryan, Eric Zimmerman, 35, 40%.
Right. Right.
I think it is important to like break down that narrative that this is like a really contentious city council, because it's also, I mean, again, it's a brand new system. They just, like, expanded city council, more than doubled city council. Like, the fact that they're disagreeing on budget, fiscal issues, on, like, governance, I mean, like, duh. Wouldn't you expect that?
Love to throw a duh in there.
what would that mean that they would all be in agreement on these, like, issues that have not really been established, like, that they're having to establish?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we can all, you know, hope for cohesion, but, like, you're asking for, like, a kind of, like, ant mind, hive mind level of, like, intuitiveness of other people's.
And we've been to Portland. We know that not everybody agrees like that.
Well, and isn't the point those
people are from Vancouver.
Oh, there you go. Nate, go ahead.
Isn't the point of having a larger council so you get different voices and different opinions and different ideas in the discussions? So, like, expecting unanimity
yeah.
is kind of, like, not the point of it all.
Totally. Totally. And I think that, honestly, I mean, there's a lot of indicators, I would say, in this study of, like, healthy debate, but also a lot of collaboration there. I also, there's a couple other things I wanted to pull. The mayor has a tie-breaking vote power. It never came into play this past year. That's not to say that it won't sometime in the new year. This was also a point of debate in the council president race, where Councillor Loretta Smith was putting forward a motion to use her council office budget to sue the city to get it in front of a judge to see if the mayor could break a tie on the new on picking the new president, which was interesting and didn't go through. Obviously, I think the optics of that are challenging. If you ask me personally, I think that the optics are challenging. The city council sues itself to break a tie. But also, there was very little opposition to Mayor Wilson's agenda. 90% of things that, I think it's 90%, of things that came before council were, 90% of ordinances were introduced by the mayor. So there was very little legislation that actually got passed last year, most of which came from, like, Peacock introduced a lot of legislation, the progressive councillors did, but there was very little opposition to what Mayor Wilson wanted to do. And that was something that we heard in the debate for council president, was my ordinance, my resolution, the former president, Alana Protogenny, you never let that come before council, or all of this sort of, you know, bellyaching about how much power the progressive councillors had. You know, Angelita Maria was able to get, like, three legislative priorities of hers passed, and kind of nobody else did. But I think that that's, you know, they're still figuring out the system, and we kind of heard that having more control, the city council having more control over their own agenda, being able to pass their own policy, and being able to sort of have a check on the mayor and the administrative power of the city is something that they're going to try to pursue more this year. Anyway, it's a good visualization if you're trying to look at, you know, who gets along with who, how people might vote. There's some interesting stuff to look at there. And of course, we are going in now. This is with a new council president, Jamie Dunphy, going into an election.
New city administrator.
New city administrator. True.
Woo-hoo.
City Administrator Lee gave his first report Wednesday. I have to go look into that. But that's your little bit of the science side of how well Portland City Council is doing.
You got the politics, now you got the science.
Yeah. Political science, they're calling it.
Poli-sci.
Poli-sci, thank you.
If you're in the know.
Who's in the know, Nate? Let's talk about that.
Not this guy.
Oh, okay. Well, some of us have a degree in it.
Poli-sci where you're like mixing a little, like, you got, like, I got a little sangria in the fridge. I'm putting on the
what are you mixing sangria with? I don't know that you should. Sounds like
mixing
a...
it with water to dilute it.
Okay, there you go. Good answer for style. 8 in the morning. Okay, let's go on to another story here. Let's talk about the governor of Oregon. She's putting together a data center advisory committee. Reed, you looked at this a little bit. Do you want to tell us about it?
to figure out what the heck is going on. Yeah, you know, maybe some of those Hawkeyes in the room have noticed some data centers cropping up in Oregon in recent years. And if you don't know what the data center is, it's like a giant colossus to the sky spanning from horizon line to horizon line. They're popular in Oregon because, and I should say data centers are like, I guess like understood to be sort of like where cloud computing, kind of like enabling cloud computing for...
And AI, right?
And AI for businesses like Amazon,
ever heard
Google,
of it?
Microsoft. Yeah. Local mom and pop businesses. they've come to Oregon because Oregon has a lot of land. It has a lot of water. And they've, like, they crop up in cities like Hillsboro, there's a ton in Prineville, also because they have a bunch of like fiber optic cable running through them. That's another important thing. Don't want too much lag time. And these and if you look at pictures like inside these data centers, they look what's the word? It's kind of like in the Matrix when Neo gets like rescued from his pod and he looks down at just this entire like world of tiny pods with cables running between them. So like nightmarish is probably a word I would use for it.
There's a nightmarish matrix, okay.
Like there's like Facebook will use data centers to test like apps, and they'll have just thousands and thousands of cell phones all integrated in this network, and they're doing, you know, app testing on it. These data centers are maybe like sources of criticism because while they while these companies tend to favor states that have a lot of land and water, the result of them is that you have less land and far less water, because they're, as I said, giant behemoths, and they soak up water like a giant behemoth-sized sponge.
Right. They take a lot of electricity from the grid to run all of this intense computing, but then the intense computing is physically warm, too hot. So then they take local water resources.
Gotta cool it down.
To cool it down so that the computer can keep running to run all of those helpful AI chatbots that pop up on every website that you go on that we love. And we need those.
So you know, there's other criticisms. Some people say, well, it doesn't really produce a lot of jobs. You know, you actually not only do you require a few technicians to run these data centers. A lot of companies like Facebook are actively trying to diminish, automate, and you know, already very automated business.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as you're saying, Althea, like they soak up a lot of electricity. They're you know, people have directly contributed them to like the maybe doubling of energy consumption that Oregon has seen like the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the like catastrophic rise in like private utility bills for people. So people are like directly impacted by data centers in like both in their lack of resources that are being diverted to these places. And then you have, you know, the argument.
It's also polluting the water. Can we say that really quick? I don't know if we mentioned that it pollutes the water.
Oh, yeah.
It takes up the water and then it puts it back in a polluted way. So there's that. Keep going.
Yeah, and then people are really kind of critical of the question of whether these actually bring, these are actually kind of economic development devices, you know, like other major infrastructure that cities try to, you know, lure. So basically, this is like the big issue at hand that the governor is trying to deal with this board. They're looking at, you know, these data centers in a critical way. And also they're, you know, I think this board like draws from both environmental activists and then also like public officials from Central Oregon, where a lot of data centers have congregated, because the fact of the matter is that there are a lot of like really broke cities in Central Oregon that for whom data centers are perhaps appetizing in the short term because they are huge infrastructure and they therefore they like pay a lot of property taxes.
Right.
So cities like Prineville will you know, have historically been open, receptive to placing data centers there, with the
but they are giving tax breaks in order to attract somebody like Amazon. Yeah, 10, 15 year, I think, in some of the stuff we read. Quick temperature check on Nate. How do you feel about AI? You're pro, right?
I love it. You know, it's a great movie. You know, actually, this article made me realize I have actually no concept as to how electricity billing works, because they were saying that prices for consumers were going up because of the increased load that they were drawing. And I actually have no idea why prices should be going up, considering that, like, they're paying for the electricity that they're consuming. So is it just that the increased load means they need to do more work to build up new electrical infrastructure to compensate for that load? Like, I don't know why electric bills should be going up for anyone when this is the bill should be being paid for. And maybe, I just don't know.
You know, that's a great question. That was one that a lot of people were asking in the past. They did actually just pass a bill. I think the Oregon state passed a bill to raise energy rates for large corporations, targeting specifically data centers, because in the past they were paying actually like a basically a franchise rate that was far lower than private consumers. So that was bad enough.
Yeah. Well, it's part of it is increasing the load on the overall electrical grid, which requires, you know, like more money and stuff to upkeep, but also because they're demanding so much more out of the system than the relative price of whatever unit of electricity I would think would go up.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, that's what I wasn't sure, because like supply demand, like it's a limited supply or demand. No, an increased demand, but a limited supply should make prices go up. But if they can meet the supply, or they can meet the demand, why would prices go up except for the whole needing to boost the infrastructure maybe to generate like twice as much power than they're used to?
Sometimes it's more than twice as much.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that like these data centers, a large one can consume energy like at the rate of like a small town like Prineville, 20,000-30,000 people. The thing about data centers is because they're like, I guess, like critical infrastructure to AI, a critical resource.
In quotes. Sorry, the people can't see you doing quotes.
I'm doing scare quotes. Yeah. I'm doing major scare quotes.
Yeah.
No, because it's critical infrastructure for the dumb tech that produces mind altering insanity images.
Don't worry, guys. We're spending a lot of money to have a machine that gives people psychosis. So that's good.
Yes, we have the psychosis farm. That's the psychosis farms that are like football field sized factories out in resource drained areas in more ways than one. And but they, because they're such critical infrastructure, they can't have any lag time. Like the big thing is like redundancy and latency. And so like these data centers, they operate at like reliability up to like 99.5 digits of 9. Like they need so for that they need like both, obviously they're siphoning energy, like, you know, electricity from the public grid, and then they also often have their own generators, which they're turning now, thinking about nuclear energy as a way to shore up their energy concerns in our
so
these are sort of the critical issues at hand. So you have like it's a major economic development sort of like driver for a lot of communities, And then there's like the downsides, which is like, you know, pollution, high energy consumption, lack of jobs, maybe no future for these data centers because they also go obsolete pretty quickly. So just like a few negatives.
A couple minor and issues, sort of, and that's why there's going to be a committee.
A couple of hiccups.
Yeah, I wanted...
The governor's pulling together a committee.
Yeah, they're going to have to... It's about finding, like, the... Making decisions about citing...
Finding the balance, Alfie.
Finding the balance, thank you. Yes, one thing I wanted to mention, and I don't think that we have time to fully get into it today, but I would love to bring some information on this next time, but the data centers that are being constructed right now to prop up the AI bubble, which of course everybody knows is a bubble, so like, is it still a bubble if everybody's like, hey guys, it's a bubble, it's going to pop and something bad is going to happen? And maybe that thing rhymes with shmishmeshin. But the...
Shmapocalypse.
I don't know about all that. But the data consumption, the data center and processing needs of large language models, which is a lot of what AI companies are putting out right now as the main thing that you should be focusing on. Like, we love large language models, even though they're kind of bad at all the stuff that we say that we need them to do.
They can solve cancer.
No, they can't. Not a large language
model. Or they can convince you that you don't have cancer, or they could convince you to drink bleach to solve your cancer.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things it could do. But there are other artificial intelligence models that are not large language models that actually are good at the processing things that they say that large language models are. So there's this whole, and they don't require the amount of processing power, but the entire sort of like illusion of AI is that we have to build a zillion data centers, use all our electricity and all of our water to have LLMs that are bad at what they're supposed to be doing, and also bad for the consumer trying to convince you that you don't know how to write an email anymore. That's not true. You definitely can write an email. And it's just also unnecessary. But when there's billions of dollars on the line, the only thing to do is to spend billions more dollars.
If it's good for the corporation, it's good for the people.
Yeah, I've always said that.
And these corporations are stable, you know, they're definitely not going to potentially just have the rug pulled out of them in 2 years when the creditors come back asking for, you know, have you created anything substantial, or have you created any sort of business model?
Yeah. They're definitely not passing the same $1 billion between three companies that they're both buying from and investing in. And it's like, guys, look how many deals we're doing. It's like, you're just maybe passing that same amount of money back and forth. And of course, it's all hypothetical money. But maybe that might be a little bit of a song for another time for us.
Absolutely. I think it'll be interesting to see what this commission talks about, because like, my last thing on the data center is that you can see it, I think, kind of like confounding, befuddling a lot of, let's say public officials that are involved in economic development, because like in one sense they look like kind of perfect investment opportunities. Like, you got like a major corporation who's willing to invest all of this like really high-tech infrastructure in your area, and you think, oh, perfect, you know, we can source really like high-skilled jobs, you know, they're going to invest back in the community, like all these things, and they're providing a service that's like, now we can be like, now Prineville is the home of Wi-Fi, now we're the home of cloud computing, in reality, like, it's not really localized in your area. Even though you have the big giant energy sucking behemoth, it's not actually really there. Like, you're not getting really any of the typical economic benefits out of it. People aren't going to Prineville to cloud compute. They're actually doing it from their own home. And so you have these really like strange statements, like from one of the people that was brought onto the commission from Eastern Oregon, I think maybe from Umatilla, who was saying like, you know, these data centers have like a positive effect on agriculture because the GPS in agriculture is coming from data centers like the ones in Eastern Oregon. And you're going, yes and no.
That is not, you know, and so no, that's not we didn't scoop the data out of Eastern Oregon to make GPS and agriculture work. But
I guess the thing is that they aren't going to Eastern Oregon to quite, yeah, exactly, to quite literally scoop the data out. And so that channel, they're not stopping in, you know, in Prineville's many great restaurants to eat food. And as they're saying, oh, just finishing up a trip to we're just siphoning some GPS out of your data center out on the edge of town.
I like this character.
Reed, I think you're underestimating how many people are pinning the locations of all the data centers and using mm-hmm. that GPS just to tour each and every one of them with the family, bringing the kids along, get to look at big buildings.
That's a smart idea, Nate. I think that is kind of the... that could be the way to retool it as a tourist destination, because they're famously, data centers are famously transparent. They want people to come in, take a tour of the place. They're beautiful, visually mm-hmm. striking.
visually striking and beautiful don't have to go together, but yes.
I'm sorry, yeah, not beautiful, yeah, awe-inspiring. Awe-inspiring in the way of like a tsunami wave as it's right in front of you, and you're going, oh, this is going to be really, really bad, but like in a way I couldn't ever conceptualize before.
And we love that. And that's why we have to have a committee about it. They're supposed to report back in October of this year with information on this. I sort of suspect that in the short session we probably will see something about data centers, although it's probably not going to be the main focus of what's going on in the State House, but it is definitely a concern that needs to be regulated. Folks,
Nate's data center beautification bill.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I'm putting murals on all of them.
Oh, yeah, paper over it. Blend it into the community.
Murals of the kids holding hands
surrounding the entire data center mural.
Now you're giving Amazon ideas. We need them to pay for that. Like they're not paying for all the data and the electricity. Okay.
We could put ads on them too.
Well, and that's a great idea. Oh, we love that too.
Because they're in a really, central location.
Nate, you should be on the board, or you should be, I guess, working for Amazon. Your talents are wasted here.
I've been saying it for years.
Okay. Let's take a little break here. You're listening to Genius Box on KBOO Community Radio. When we come back, call in questions about anarchist calisthenics. Stay with us. And we are back here in the Genius Box. This is KBOO Community Radio. I'm Althea.
You know, I've always been a genius.
Good. A genius. Whoa!
Spent my time on KBOO.
I think we need to get into parody songs about ourselves immediately. Powerful
I
stuff.
I am well ahead of you there.
I know. Here. I know. You're just the right person. Okay, it's Althea and Reed and Nate in the Genius Box. We are getting into the call-in segment of the program. Today, we are talking about anarchist calisthenics. What the heck does that mean? If you haven't heard the term before, I think it was coined by this fella in a Harper's article in the 90s, talking about basically this idea of getting used to breaking the rules in small ways so you might be better equipped to break them in big ways. Nate, do you have the clip that I brought? Okay, this is from an excerpt from a TikTok about this. Sorry, guys, TikTok, but from johnjohn.jpg. Okay, hit me.
The term anarchist calisthenics is both wordy and off-putting to some, but if you understand this concept, it's going to empower both you and your community and change how you read the news in everyday life. James C. Scott is a professor who, at the fall of the Berlin Wall, was in East Germany and realized something, that there were absurd rules that he wouldn't follow if no one was watching, but his behavior would change if people are watching. And he thought, if this rule is stupid and worthy of being broken, then I should have the moral fortitude to break this rule even if I'm being judged by other people. So he posits that morality is like a muscle that you have to build and you have to exercise, or it'll atrophy like your real muscles. And so he says, you should break stupid rules of little consequence in order to prepare you for when there is a big rule of big consequence that needs to be broken. And this is where the name anarchist calisthenics comes from. If you're sitting here wondering, how would you react as a tank came to you in Tiananmen Square, you need to ask yourself, what little things are you doing now? And don't let that term scare you away. Anarchist calisthenics isn't the way that we've been conditioned to think of anarchy. As some sort of desire for chaos or the collapse of organized society, that's not what anarchy is. Purely, it's just anti-authoritarian, something that focuses more on mutual aid and how community can help each other rather than needing help to be prescribed top down. Practicing anarchist calisthenics is looking around at your community and say, what can I do now? Or better yet, what's something small and stupid that I could resist now to help me practice resisting when it really matters?
Okay, we are back, I think. Yes, okay, great. That is a little bit about anarchist calisthenics. I want to know, what silly little rules are you breaking? How are we building our muscles in this way? 503-231-8187 is the phone number. Let us know, what anarchist calisthenics are you doing? What do you think about this? 503-231-8187. And we have Doug on the line, who called in early, but we want to go to you anyway. What's up, Doug?
Well, I'm thinking that we should be thinking of this, of cutting the lights down. I heard a program on the radio station about cutting the lights down, and we could do that and with no problem and have a lot of electricity. Why aren't we thinking of on that level?
I think that is certainly something to be doing. I think we're also talking about, with the electricity issues and data centers, we're talking about matters of scale. So certainly that does cut down a little bit in your home electricity bill, but the amount of electricity that's being gobbled up by data centers is truly like several orders of magnitude larger than that. So it certainly can't hurt to use electricity in your own life, but when we're talking about mega corporations, it's kind of on another level that does require kind of intervention or regulation.
Well, why can't they cut the lights even out? I mean, they were saying that the electricity and the lights on the town doesn't really matter. I've always thought this problem is a big, huge problem, because if we cut the lights out in a lot of towns, I mean, when you fly over a town and you see all these lights on, you think, man, that's a lot of electricity.
I think that's true, yeah.
We're talking mega. I mean, we're not just talking about a little bit of electricity for a few houses or something. We're talking about huge expenditure on electricity.
Right. I guess here's my counter to that. Public safety. We got to be able to see where we're going and try not to hit people on the street who are walking, well, yeah, for example. But also, you know, like our our bulbs and things, those types of, you know, we're not using the halogens anymore. We've gotten a lot more efficient. Reed, what were you going to say?
I was going to say maybe Doug, you have like a system for, you know, you wouldn't cut out beautiful street lamps, but we'd cut out maybe neon signs. But then which neon signs? You'd have to create a little matrix for which lights to cut out, which ones to keep.
Mm-hmm.
What's in your keep and what's in your cutout?
Why aren't they thinking of that?
Well, yeah. Hmm. Well, maybe we're the ones that need to be doing it.
Make the list.
Yeah. Thank you, Doug. Appreciate you calling.
Thank you, Doug.
Okay. Folks, if you want to call in, we're talking about anarchist calisthenics, breaking little rules that maybe don't matter so much so that we can strengthen our resolve if there's a big rule that we might need to be breaking. What are some types of anarchist calisthenics that people who've been talking about this bring up? One of them, jaywalking. And this is in the original piece from the 90s when it was coined, was looking at, you know, this sort of societal adherence or like obeying the street sign that even if there's cars coming, that there's a pressure to do that, practicing a little bit of jaywalking.
I will say,
using your own discernment to say that it's okay to walk across the street right now.
This article, the concept comes from Germany, or this guy's time in Germany.
Yeah.
I will say, from spending a lot of time in Germany, they love chastising you when you jaywalk. I will say it's more elderly people. There'll be zero cars, like, in eyesight.
Mm. For miles.
White part of the day. For miles.
Yeah.
Kilometers, they say.
Thank you.
And the moment you step out, hello, yeah. That's an angry hello.
Okay, got it. That you're not supposed to be doing that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's one. People also talk about graffiti as anarchist calisthenics, putting up stickers somewhere, they don't, like, you don't get a permit to hang up flyers, you know. Get some tape. Get a stapler. Staple it to a telephone pole. You know, anarchist calisthenics. Get stronger. Okay, Tawasi is, I think, on the line with us. We're gonna get him in just a moment. Reed, do you have any anarchist calisthenics that you've been doing? Obeying, disobeying.
Well, I like, you know, playing shows. We'll play a lot of, maybe not entirely by city code permitted shows.
Sure.
So I like playing some DIY shows. I think are great.
Mm-hmm.
There are some great, like, people who are putting together these shows. They're like great collective spaces, often all ages, safe spaces. You know, they do a really good job of really establishing codes of conduct in advance. So yeah, that's a nice kind of collective anarchic.
Yeah. Getting comfortable with breaking the rules. I think we're ready to go to Tawasi now. Hi, Tawasi.
Hey, good morning. You know, one that I'm comfortable doing that it isn't for everyone is kind of breaking the rules of the way that you talk to police, because they're accustomed to a certain script that they stick to. So when confronted by law enforcement, which happens far more often than I like to think about, I tell them to keep their hands where I can see them because they might have a weapon. And I also tell them that people who match their description have been known to commit murders in this area, and that they might be affiliated with the same gang because they're wearing those gang colors. So it's kind of against the rules to tell them what they think they should be telling you. But if you're yelling at a cop to keep their hands where they can keep their hands away from their weapon, they don't like that. But if you don't have any weapons and they do, but this is the other thing I wanted to bring up, is that there's a shifting perception of what is against the rules. So an example of something that I can do that I normally am comfortable doing that I didn't used to think about ever buying a permit for is giving somebody a sandwich. In Portland, you're supposed to buy a $75 permit from the city if you want to give somebody a sandwich. And I'm certain that many nonprofits across the city pay that $75. I do not. I was giving people a sandwich before the permit came into play, and I don't feel like it's my responsibility to pay the city for the privilege to give somebody a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of shift what is right, and the law, the overall point of this is that the law is not an effective arbiter of righteousness.
Very true.
My ancestors are indigenous and Jewish. So both sides of my family have been persecuted for our religious beliefs and practices, our spirituality and community, not because it was any form of evil or terror or hedonistic savagery. You know, it just is not Christian. And, you know, these neo-Christians, they're going to be doing that stuff again. We only just got our right. Again, here's another one, and I'll give you just this one more example before I let you go.
Sure.
Religious freedom, which is, as you might know, constitutional right, was only granted to indigenous people in 1978. Prior to that, our spirituality and ceremony was considered a felony, a federal crime. And my parents, in the year I was born, prior to 1978, gave me a naming ceremony. So the very act of my birthing and naming were an act of resistance against what I consider to be draconian fascistic behavior by a government. So, you know, that it's, I find it highly ironic that the Trump administration is prosecuting these black women for leading a protest against a pastor in a church and saying, oh, we have religious freedom, when literally I had to be given a felony religious freedom in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll leave you guys with that. They move the line on what's considered legal, but that doesn't mean that it's right or just.
Yeah, very true. Well, thank you, Tawasi. We appreciate you calling in. As always, folks, if you would like to call in about anarchist calisthenics, are you getting your reps in? What are you doing? We want to know. 503-231-8187. Can I say one? When I was thinking about this concept, I realized I've done something kind of like this, because there's breaking laws and then there's breaking norms. And I think it's important to kind of like, once you start thinking about this, it sort of like shows you the scope of these things. When I was in college, I realized that, and I think I was like in conversation with a couple of my friends, but that, you know, walking around, it's like a busy campus. Everybody's kind of like in everybody's space when we're trying to get from class to class or whatever. And talking with some friends, I realized that like of how often we were, and I was talking to women at the time, like getting out of the way for men to walk by. And that when passing by a man, like he didn't think about most of the time getting out of the way. There was like an expectation that the women who were in his path, even if there was like a bunch of us, would skirt or would like allow room in that sort of like body language. And so we like did an experiment basically of like what would happen if I just didn't get out of the way. And I got shoulder checked or people, you know, like it would be like a, it would suddenly, you know, like there's a noticing of like, oh, you broke the norm that was expected, you know. And I'm not to say that that's like the right thing to do all of the time, but like realizing that that is something that was kind of being expected of us to get out of the way. And when you break the norm, it's like kind of startles you that you shouldn't be doing that. Reed? Reed, would you shoulder check me? Be honest.
Well, I don't think our shoulders line up, so I think my,
okay,
my
brag.
Shoulder catch you in the... would I shoulder check you? And this is on the record? No.
Okay, great. Then we're in good shape. we have Jeff on the line. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning. I hope you're well. And men, Althea, by and large, are pigs.
I've heard that. Now, I've heard that.
Well, I speak as a man, and I say that quite honestly. That's breaking the rule, an unwritten rule that men should be pigs and be proud of it. Mm. But the rule that I'm going to address at this juncture is I choose to smoke in parks, and I don't care. I'm not around the playground. I'm in the park. It's a public place. And the atmosphere is already filled with the fumes of vehicles on all sides of the park. And I am really very tired of the scolds, as Reed would mention, the scolds in Germany who come out when someone jaywalks. No. I'm going to smoke in city parks, and I do not care. Thank you for taking my call. Goodbye.
Thank you for calling, Jeff. A little a little anarchist calisthenics. Are we breaking rules and laws that are stupid? Question mark. Call in. We got a couple of minutes left. 503-231-8187. Tangent is on the line with us. Hi, Tangent. Good morning.
Hey there. Hey, everyone. I'm reminded of one thing you mentioned about your previous experience with the men and the... but you said skirt. You said skirt. And there's like, what is a skirt? The issues? That might be what do you call it? Patriarchal type of diminishing the feminine or something. Okay, but anyway, I want to get to, I won't say exactly what I do or don't do, because I don't want any... okay, so anyway, I'm reminded of a Cheech and Chong bit called Chabornik. Have you heard it? It's from the 70s.
I don't know that I have. Have you, Reed?
Okay, no.
Must have missed that side of the record.
I can't use one word.
Oh, boy. Okay. Tangent, okay, be real careful, okay? Like, otherwise, we're going to have to cut you.
I won't use it.
Okay.
So, okay, so there's like the tundra is blowing, okay? And you hear this guy go, Chabornik. Yeah. What's that? Looks like dog crap, okay? But it's dog.
Yeah, no, gotcha, gotcha. Keep going.
But we can say crap. Okay, anyway, and he goes, smell. What? Smell. Smells like dog crap. Pick up. Pick up. Feels like dog crap. Taste. Taste! But didn't break anybody's eardrums, and that's the way it goes.
Tangent. Okay.
And then he says, tastes like dog crap. And the sergeant goes, good thing we not step in it.
Okay. I get that. Okay, cool.
Okay. And the other one was, this is perfect, because this goes back to Fire Sign Theater. I think they were like a troupe out of like Harvard or something, but did all this comedy stuff again in the 70s, 60s. But there's this skit, and I don't know the name of it, but a guy's sitting at a light, and it's obviously like 2 in the morning or something. There's no traffic, and he mentions these things. But all he does is keep complaining about, oh, dumb light, and gee, I hope I don't... And after a while, he's like, oh, I hope I don't run out of gas. And then the car actually does. I mean, it takes like 4 or 5 minutes, but the whole monologue of him, it's absolutely... He goes, it's stupid to sit here when there's absolutely nobody going by, but he continues to do so.
Wow. Well, Tangent, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. We got a couple minutes left here. We're going to try to get to as many folks as we can. We've got Janet on the line. Hi, Janet.
Hey, good morning. You know, I got a little quote, but I think that the bigger picture is that we are true and authentic. You can really be seeming like you're such an anarchist just to be a true person that's authentic and not be a complicit sellout. I'm not totally against propriety and diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a couple of swear words, a little thing. But the big picture is like go to a big King's March thingy and have a big sign you made. And it's kind of the little things about things that help each other. When the big picture is, I think, to actually be authentic, to have a conscience, not just to buy into fake morality. And I got this quote from Electric Antibiotic. I'm going to share with you from Holly Uppanema. Feel hopeless? You aren't. One thing you can do is call out the evil of Israelis every time you can. Call them exactly what they are, what they tell the world they are, based purely on their words and actions. Radicalized, colonializing terrorists. So I'm thinking it might be just a big thing to be really give a care, have a big conscience, and not just kind of take it down a notch and be some kind of borderline sellout. That would be really nice to me. I would enjoy that if people would do that more.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Janet. I appreciate you bringing that up, and thanks for the quote. We're going to race through and try to get to everybody. So we got Sharon on the line. Hi, Sharon.
Hey. This is a great conversation. One thing I just wanted to pipe in with is the concept of guerrilla gardening. It's really just to plant things wherever you see a space, usually beautiful things you want to plant, little flowers, whatever. They're kind of like random acts of kindness or little moments of happiness kind of thing. But, yeah, you don't have permits to do it. It might not be your land, but you could plant, you know, flower. And that's the concept of guerrilla gardening. And I think it's, anyway, it's, I guess, illegal, but it's certainly beautiful. And, anyway, that was all I wanted to pass on.
Love that. Thank you, Sharon. I think that, yeah, that's totally in the anarchist calisthenics to get used to. Like, I've seen people go around with native flower seeds in like a salt shaker and just sort of shake it in empty spaces in the dirt and see what grows. I think that's awesome. We got just a couple minutes left, but we have April lined up for us. Hi, April.
Hi. My idea was just that I don't have a computer or a cell phone, which is probably like, you know, a pretty big step. But something that people could do is when you get online, you can look and see if AI is running your search or not. And you can choose to just use the Google search. And that also would affect what you were bringing up about the data centers.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what they're doing is training AI. And a lot of the AI is not for us. It's not online. It's for military.
Mm.
And there's really no reason for that. So you can still use your computers. Just don't use the AI. Start looking at things and figuring out, you know, little things that you can do. You can look online and see if your search is powered by AI. That's a really small step.
Love it. Thank you, April. Appreciate Love the it. Call. Before we go, Nate, you got any anarchist calisthenics over there?
You know me. I'm a rule follower.
He's big into board games. He loves rules, you guys.
I kind of can't turn it off. It's not always a good thing. But when I'm on my bike and it's late at night, I'm going to jump a light because, you know, I can see everywhere. And especially this time of year, it's cold. It's usually rainy, but not right now. And I just want to get home. And I think that's reasonable. And every now and then, I might skip down a one-way street when it's super late and no one's there to get to the next turn so that I don't have to go too far around.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit, but it's maybe not my best quality that I am a rule follower, but I think it's not a bad quality.
Well, I think it comes in handy when you're playing as many board games as you do. But maybe we'll get some reps in. Anarchist calisthenics. Let's go jaywalking. What do you say?
I do love jaywalking.
Let's cheat at board games.
Let's cheat at board games. Oh, boy.
You already played the Eagles during the show. Let's not go into the board games.
I'm just pushing all of Nate's buttons today. My sister used to slip the Queen Frostine card up her sleeve when we would play Candyland, and then she would always manage to get Queen Frostine.
Funny how that works. Maybe she was just better at the game than you. Did you think about that?
I mean, she was better at getting to the deck of cards before you.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, she was better at the game in a certain way.
In a certain way. Any last anarchist calisthenics reps you're getting in, Reed? No?
Touching my toes.
Touching your toes. Okay, that's good, too. They don't want you to do that. The man. The authority. What's normal? What's not? But also, you know, I think that some of our more current norms, like, I think there's, like, a resistance in some way to be... Or it's in the script now to be antisocial. So even being social, being kind, can be a resistance of the authority that wants to alienate us from each other. Okay. I think we got to wrap things up here. Is that okay with you? Do I have your permission?
I think you have my permission. Can I finish by restating Nate's lovely quote? When I'm on my bike and it's late at night, I'm going to skip a light.
Love that. Well, we'll leave it there. You've been
something
listening.
Very Eagles about it,
actually, Nate, which I know is going to grind your gears. But that is our Genius Box for today. Stick around to KBOO. We got Arab Voices coming up next. Thank you, Reed. Thank you, Nate. Thank you, everybody who called. Get your reps in. Anarchist Calisthenics. Bye.
Hi, I'm Queen Ida, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM on your radio. Your spot for Cajun and Zydeco music. Bon ton roulette. Okay, let's go.